All right, I think we'll get started. So people in the back in the lobby, if you want to come in. There we go. The door is closed. You are now officially a captive audience. Okay. Welcome. Bienvenue. My name is Denise Lachance, and I'm one of the members of the Ottawa Coalition Against the Tories. And we're a group of individuals here, a small group, that supports the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty's campaign for economic disruption. And we felt that it was important as part of that campaign to touch base with the community here in Ottawa. And that's why we've invited John Clark from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty to come up from Toronto to speak about the campaign for economic disruption. And I also have on my left Heidi Rimke from Ottawa, who will speak about the Ottawa context and motivate why you should actively support the campaign for economic disruption and to get involved. Alors, j'aimerais vous souhaiter la bienvenue à cette réunion de la coalition contre les conservateurs. On n'a pas vraiment un nom en français encore. Nous avons invité John Clark de Toronto, de la coalition ontarienne contre la pauvreté, à venir discuter de leur campagne de brassage économique et pourquoi vous devez vous impliquer. On a aussi comme invité Heidi Rimke d'Ottawa qui va parler du contexte local et comment on pourrait commencer à mobiliser pour appuyer la campagne. La réunion va se dérouler en anglais, mais pour les francophones, je vous invite à vous exprimer dans la langue de votre choix si vous voulez vous exprimer en français et je vais tenter de faire une interprétation de vos questions, vos commentaires et des réponses pour que vous puissiez suivre la discussion. Okay. So we'll have our two speakers. This is the way it is going to unfurl. John will speak first, then Heidi. Then I'm going to make a pitch for signing up, if you haven't already. Then I'm going to make a pitch for money. Then I'm going to make a pitch for our first organizing meeting to actually create a group, because what we've got here are a few people, more than a group. Our meeting on the July 31st. Then I'll open it up to discussion. Then our speakers will wrap up. And then we'll continue the discussion informally. So that's the drill. All right, so on behalf of everyone here in the room, I'd like to welcome both Heidi and John, who are going to speak this evening. So John's going to go this one. He would like me to turn this microphone on. He didn't want to catch all my... Now it's on. But you didn't want to catch all my drill anyway, did you? Anyway, so I'll turn it over to John.
Well, thank you very, very much. I'd like to first of all say how enormously important it is that the Ottawa Coalition Against the Tories is up and running, but obviously any struggle against this provincial government must involve mobilisation in this city and in this region as a matter of absolute priority. I'm going to try over the next little while to explain the roots and the nature of the campaign of economic disruption against the Harris government, that our organisation has issued the initial call for, but now we have a common front of organisations that goes well beyond OCAP. The slogan, amongst a number of others that we've employed and which has been used for this meeting, is the long retreat is over. And perhaps I'd like to begin by explaining a little bit about what we mean by using that kind of formulation. We see a situation where over the last number of years we have been up against a gathering political agenda that has become progressively more ruthless and progressively more damaging. And the Harris government, I think, embodies that agenda with a clarity and a force that is really quite exceptional. I don't want to suggest for a moment that the agenda of global capital rests entirely on the shoulders of the Harris government. That would be far too great a responsibility. But on the other hand, I don't think you could say there's any regime anywhere that more enthusiastically pursues the goals and agenda of globalization than the Harris government, with its arrogant and offensive slogan that Ontario is open for business. This is true both in terms of the attacks that they have actually carried out, and I don't think the celebrated litany of woe is what's really needed at this meeting, but I think we all have seen this government implement measures over the last 6-7 years that have been devastating in their immediate impact and absolutely horrendous in terms of their long-term implications. And Harris, of course, embodies the very essence of the notion of an agenda that is dominated by the removing of all barriers to the making of profit. Be that the dismantling of social programs, be it the weakening of labour legislation and employment standards legislation, be it the removal of protections to the environment, be it an assault on the very physical infrastructure of the province, such as has emerged in Walkerton and beyond. That essentially is what this government is all about. And the Harris government too is dominated by a political intransigence that has brought something new into political life. You know, you must give the devil his due. The Harris government is not about the tired old compromises of an earlier period. The Harris government is about going about the job of dismantling the gains of a lifetime with enormous enthusiasm. I remember a meeting a while ago, I got up and made a statement that seeing the Harris government in power was like watching the Parry Sound Kiwanis Club with state power. Somebody in the audience got up and condemned me for making that statement, saying that Harris government is actually the living embodiment of finance capital. But I think you need to understand the Harris government is actually both of those things at the same time. That the most powerful economic and social interests in society have precisely turned over political responsibility to a gang of political thugs, a group of people who for years sat around and talked about what they would like to do to welfare recipients and unions and people who worry about the environment and all these things, and they now are in power and they're loving every minute of it, and they don't particularly care if a wide section of the population intensely dislikes what they're doing. And that seems to me to be the point at which we must draw some important conclusions. If we are to talk about, after a series of years of an increasingly vicious attack, if we are to talk about what we must do in the face of the Harris government, we have to take stock of the kind of regime that we are up against and draw some lessons. See, I don't want to suggest for a moment that people haven't fought back against the Harris government. They certainly have. People have given hours of their time, and there have been important and inspiring struggles. The Days of Action in their time pointed to some methods of resistance from which very, very important lessons could be drawn. Some of the other individual struggles that have engaged in against this government have been of great importance. But I want to make this point, and I think it's a really important one if we're going to come to grips with the tasks that we have to take up. We have now arrived at a period, and it's not just true in terms of Harris, it's true in terms of the discussions going on behind the fence in Quebec City and Genoa and whatever else, but we have arrived at a period when the old methods of limited token protest have come to an end in terms of their effectiveness. You know, there was a period when in society there was a certain level of compromise that existed. Some concessions were being made, a welfare state was being incrementally strengthened, trade unions were being dealt with, concessions were being made. This was all true. But over a lengthy period of time, that agenda has shifted to something that is sometimes described as neoliberalism, call it what you will. But the reality is that we are now up against a changed situation. The notion that we can operate within an edifice of give and take and compromise and raising our voices in moral objection to what is happening and think that there will be some level of give and take within the system, that has decisively come to an end. And if anybody thinks that you can make a moral case to the Harris government to rein in what it's doing, I think they are living in some kind of sad and sick fantasy world. Because surely the last number of years have demonstrated to us conclusively that this government frankly doesn't give a damn what we think about anything. This is a government that is determined, and people say they're falling in the polls. That isn't going to stop them. On the contrary, that's going to intensify what they're going to do. They're going to be saying, over the next few years, we've got an opportunity to change the province even more decisively than we've done before, and to divide up the loot amongst our friends and then take plush jobs in corporate boardrooms when this is all over. They're not going to stop because they're becoming unpopular. That's another illusion and delusion that people suffer from. So we have to grapple with the whole concept of how we change the nature of how we fight. Now, before I get to the economic disruption campaign, I'd like to speak from the perspective of some of the lessons and experiences that our organisation had over the last number of years. Because, you see, we're a largely Toronto-based poor people's organisation. And we've been up against an agenda of mass homelessness, the implementation of workfare, increasing substitution of physical repression by the police for social provision, a process of social cleansing to drive homeless people and poor people out of the center of the city, attack on immigrant communities and communities of color. This has all dominated the work and the experience that we've had. And we very, very early on wanted to begin to ask ourselves and begin to explore how we could fight back in a way that would make a difference. And we knew that we weren't initially anything like powerful enough to actually take on in open battle, as it were, the Harris government and defeat their agenda just by ourselves. But what we tried to do was to find ways in which we could begin to actually challenge the implementation of that agenda. And so that meant, for example, that we paid a great deal of attention to representing individuals and individual families, and actually using weapons of collective action to defend people. So that, for example, we had a man come to us a number of years ago who had worked for a Shell gas station for a number of days, 5 days, I believe. And at the end of that period, he was laid off. And when he went back to get his paycheck, he was told, "We're not going to pay you because we were just training you for those 5 days. You weren't actually working for us." So what we did was, rather than go to the Labour board, which of course as the Labour ministry has seen its funding cut by 40% by the Harris government and can't deal with those kinds of cases in any timely way, and this man was facing eviction, we simply picketed the gas station and prevented them from selling any gas for a few hours. And that had an incredibly educational effect on the employer. And it's a small example, but it was an example of how you can actually organise to make a difference. You know, we didn't just sort of go and hold up a sign and try to say they were nasty people. We tried to hurt them, frankly, as they'd hurt that man. And it was very, very effective. And we do this kind of thing all the time with welfare. We've mobilised extensively to block deportations. We've mobilised to confront security companies and police divisions that are brutal and vicious in how they deal with people. And we've done it on broader questions too. A number of years ago in the West End community of Parkdale, they decided that they were going to implement a measure where they would put a three-unit cap on the creation of any new housing in Parkdale. And what that basically meant was that there would be no more building of apartment buildings for low-income tenants. All they would have would be single-family dwellings for the more upscale people that they wanted to bring into the community. Part of this whole process of social cleansing that goes on in Toronto, Ottawa, and everywhere. And so they actually had the effrontery to call a public meeting in a community that is made up of 92% of its population is low-income tenants. They actually had the effrontery to call a public meeting to promote this measure as one that would, as they put it, restore health to the life of the community. And so they, of course, only notified the Business Association and the Yuppie Residents Association what they were going to do. They didn't tell anybody else. But we found out, and what we did was we organised a pizza dinner for poor people outside the meeting. Then we went in and we took over the meeting. We made up the overwhelming majority of the people there. And as soon as they got up to, the local councillor got up to begin to make his presentation, we explained that we were going to put a motion on the floor for the meeting, that the meeting no longer belonged to him, it belonged to the low-income tenants, and we were going to change the format and have a meeting on how to fight the bylaw and defeat it. It was carried overwhelmingly. He was elbowed off the stage and the meeting went on. And that led to a situation where the bylaw went down in flames. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that are enormously important. And we've engaged in a whole series of struggles against social cleansing when we took over Allen Gardens Park and established a safe park for homeless people. When we mobilised against some of the social cleansing by police of homeless people. We look for concrete and practical ways to fight back. So that, for example, when the Toronto Film Festival came to the city, and as they always do, all the homeless people in the area were cleared out of the way for the gala night, we organised a mass panhandle of the film festival. it was important as a gesture, but it was also practically important. Because the next month, the Word on the Street Book Festival took place, and the organisers of the festival actually issued a letter, an open letter, to the police asking that no panhandlers or homeless people be removed from the location because they wanted to avoid a situation where OCAP would come and do something at their festival. So, in other words, we look for ways to fight back. Now, I won't explore a great deal here, but I want to move towards the area of economic disruption. On June 15th of last year, we marched on Queen's Park. People probably heard of what the media dubbed the Queen's Park riot. What essentially we tried to do was to bring a delegation of homeless people to the legislature with the demand that they be allowed to address it. And it seemed to us a fair enough thing to be asking. We knew that 26 homeless people had died on the streets so far that year. We knew that 15 of them had been active in the work of our coalition. We felt we had a pretty fair right to address the legislature. Now, the Speaker's office called us and told us that it would be outside of the model of Westminster Parliament for such a thing to take place, but we're not that accomplished as parliamentarians. We still thought it was fair, so we went to do it anyway. And they attacked us in a way that was incredible. They used mounted police, they used riot squads. And what was incredible was it took them an hour to clear the grounds. The people that we brought out, about 2,000 people, were just not prepared to be driven back. They stood their ground, they fought back. It was an absolutely incredible situation. It created, no question, a sensation. But the point about it was, after all the arrests were made and all the other things happened, is there was huge support. Support poured in from everywhere. People talking about, what can we do to take on this government? And when we got all our people out of jail and everything, we decided that the issue was to go forward in the struggle against the Harris government. And so we came up with this concept of economic disruption. And we think it's a means of struggle that goes beyond the rituals of token protest and begins to address how you can actually stop a government like the Harris government. And the idea of it is simply this, that people will mobilise in their communities on their own basis, in their workplaces, in their local communities, in a way that actually causes economic pain, be that work stoppages, be it blockades, be it the most imaginative and varied forms of social mobilisation. But the common denominator be that you go after the cash registers of this province. And basically what you say to the corporations is, you think you get something out of the Harris regime. What we're going to demonstrate to you, in fact, is that we can put a price tag on your support for the Harris government that is ruinous. And we can stop this government proceeding with its agenda. And we think that offers us something to actually fight with. But if we're going to do it, it's got to be serious. And in the course of the last number of months, we've built up a common front of over 60 different organisations. First Nations communities. Huge support within First Nations communities. In fact, the Mohawks of Tiandanaga went out recently and organised a blockade of a road bridge leading to a cement works, and to show practically how this kind of activity could be engaged in by First Nations communities, and it's spreading. We have high school students ready to walk out in October when the campaign gets underway. And the discussions we've had with a number of high school students, they told us that, you know, we've done walkouts before, but the question we want to put to you is, what do you want us to do when we get out? And so we think we've got a few answers for them. We have trade unionists of the most varied kind ready to support this. QP Ontario, locals within, at least, I'm missing some I know, but the CAW, steelworkers, UFCW, CEP, OPSU, OSSTF, elementary teachers, a whole number of labour councils, tenants organisations, Canadian Federation of Students, all of these organisations. And October the 16th, the campaign will kick off with a campaign with an action of disruption in the financial district of Toronto, to actually begin by going right into the belly of the beast and showing that people can mobilise in a way that that does indeed hurt their cash registers. So that is the proposal that we're putting forward, and that is what we would like to see taken up in Ottawa and in the surrounding area in a very, very powerful way. There are so many possibilities. The strike weapon is perhaps the most powerful and obvious weapon that can be used. But outside of that, the mobilisation of communities has incredible potential. If you stand on the Ambassador Bridge in Windsor and you look at the just-in-time inventory coming across by truckloads, just on a scale that is mind-boggling, you realise how, if people were prepared to mobilise to prevent that flow of goods and services, you could cause impact that would have the Harris government slumped over empty 40 ounces in a state of demoralisation. That is entirely possible and entirely achievable. But what it requires is that we recognise that we've got to be prepared to struggle in a new way. And let me say, the other side is giving us incentives all the time. Not only in terms of what they're doing to us through their political agenda, but how increasingly they respond to people's mobilisation. And I say this just a few days after the slaughter of a brother in Genoa. And you look at how repression and the use of the policeman's billy club, how the criminalisation of dissent and protest is becoming such a common feature of life. A little while ago, we went into James Flaherty's office in Whitby and pitched some of his furniture out on the street. Now, we were accused of... The Crown Attorney in Whitby successfully arguing for my detention on the charges arising from this referred to this as an act of terrorism. I have to say that life must have been incredibly placid in Whitby up until now, if throwing some Tory filing cabinets out in the street constitutes terrorism. But as absurd and laughable as that is exactly what we were up against. We had some 19 people arrested. I think 15 of those people are still banned by their bail conditions from associating with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. We have two people under house arrest, released only on the basis of being under house arrest. And we have a bunch of us facing conditions. One man, Sean Lee Popham, before he was released into house arrest, spent 37 days in Whitby Jail. I spent 25 there. Another man spent 10. This over an act of, hardly the most devastating political action that's ever been carried out. But they feel themselves so threatened that... That's right. When they were preparing the case against Sean, when he went for his bail hearing, they successfully got a detention order on him. They brought in an intelligence cop from the Toronto Police Service by the name of Gerhard Meisner. And Meisner argued that OCAP was a violent organisation. We used as you've probably seen, the sun that the Mohawk Nation uses in their symbol, because we have Mohawk members and we consider ourselves very proud to use that symbol. Meisner testified in court that this was OCAP's depiction of an incendiary device. It's funny, but a young man goes back to jail because of that kind of testimony. So, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we find ourselves up against. Now, I don't say that to express fear or even surprise. I mean, it's not very surprising that a government that is going to let people die on the streets wants to lock people up in jail if they try to protest them and resist them. That's fairly obvious. But I must say this. In the face of that kind of attack, what has struck us is that we have received mountains of continued support, growing support, coming in waves. And in terms of intimidation, anything but. In fact, if one of the tactics they had in their list of things to do was to see what putting OCAP people in jail did, they can take that off their list, because I can tell you it doesn't work. We went to We went into Whitby Jail, where the prisoners treated us with every kindness and every consideration, because Whitby Jail is just one of a number of warehouses for poor people that the Harris government keeps operating in the present period. So I'll wrap up here, but just by making this point, that we are going to be able, I think, in the period ahead, to engage in a very, very serious struggle against Harris. Everywhere you see it. You've seen it in the anti-globalisation movement against the broader agenda, but you're seeing it come home here now in Ontario. You're seeing people ready to take up a fight. You're seeing people say that enough is enough. But we have to understand that if we're going to unleash such a movement, it's not going to correspond to the old forms of what was considered respectable, what was considered sedate, and what was considered good press. We're going to have to be prepared to unleash something that isn't particularly primarily concerned about sound bites. We're going to have to be prepared to unleash something that is explosive, that is powerful, that is determined, that is relentless, because the Harris government is relentless. And if we're prepared to do that, if we're prepared to struggle in that kind of serious way that the situation demands, if we're prepared to fight to win, then we can dispel this sick sense of inevitability that has been attached to the Harris agenda so far. I say that the Harris government is not a powerful formation. They are a crude, rather stupid bunch of political thugs that, if they were to face a mobilisation of working people and popular sector organisations in this province and communities under attack, that acted as they can and should and must act in the period ahead, that we can and we will defeat this government. If we're prepared to fight on that basis, we can and will win against them. Thank you very much.
Now I'll turn the mic over to Heidi, who will continue the discussion.